Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 4th. I'm Ray Graff. Is your vehicle making a noise you can't explain? Maybe you're driving along and one of those mysterious check engine lights goes off on the dashboard, causing a great angst and a gnashing of teeth. Well, if that happened to you, you're lucky, because Gordon Fricke is here, or on the line anyway, not in the studio. He's here to answer your automotive repair and maintenance questions. If you have a question about your car or truck, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Oh, yeah, it's been a long vacation. I'm a little out of practice, but we'll get this done. 800-348-2551. Cars, Gordon Fricke, coming up after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The show today is all about automotive maintenance repair, and with us when we do that is Gordon Fricke. He's here now. Gordon Fricke is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. He's been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years, and he knows his stuff. If you have a question, call early. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. This show gets really jammed really fast, much like a traffic jam out Worcester way when you're out on I-90. 800-348-2551. Call now or email voxpop@wamc.org. And we'll try to get to as many of those as possible. Gordon Fricke, welcome back, sir.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
I'm very rested now. It's kind of difficult getting back into the work swing of things. So
I know it. That happens to me just over like one day off, let alone a whole week, you know?
Oh, yeah, man. Sitting at the beach. So you'll have to carry the show today, but you do that every time. So I think we'll be all right.
I'll do the best I can over the phone.
You got it. You know, there's something uniquely satisfying about working on your own vehicle. And so my brother and I put an alternator, simple job, in my son's 2000 Chevy Blazer. I got to tell you, you feel like a king when you get that thing in and it works, you know?
You know, what you're saying, it really is true, though. Craftspeople, people that work with their hands, carpenters, plumbers, mechanics, there is something about our brains that satisfies us when we can fix something. It's broken, it's ruined, it's wrecked, and we rebuild it or fix it. And it really does feel good.
Yeah, you know, and again, the new cars, they're a mystery to me. But this one is old enough that I can say, oh, there's the alternator. It's right there. And this was a few bolts and a simple job, but it's not like that anymore.
No, it's funny you say that. I had to put an alternator in a very exotic BMW, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. And it was in a pretty challenging location, like about 5 hours worth of challenge. Those aren't the fun ones.
Yeah, you know, that's amazing. And, of course, you know, you and I have talked about Cadillacs over the years, and I've had a couple with blown head gaskets. Head gasket itself, not an expensive part, but you have to take the whole engine apart to get to it.
Exactly. We run into vehicles now where let's say a $10 or $15 sensor requires 13 hours to replace it. And that's a little bit rare, but there are some strange vehicles that have buried components.
Yeah,
talk about making the owner unhappy.
And making Gordon Fricke very wealthy. Well done, sir. how about a couple quick emails here, and then we'll take a break, and then we will hit the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. This is from Bob. And Bob says, I have a 2006 Toyota Tundra with a rusted steering rack bracket. This is the bracket that connects the steering rack to the front subframe. Is this something that can be easily welded typically, or do the front subframe need to be replaced? Is this something I need to take to a body shop or a local dealer? And that is from Bob.
Yeah, that gets you into potential safety territory in that if you don't properly repair that bracket that holds the steering rack in and it fails and a catastrophic accident occurs,
yeah,
that's bad news for everybody. I would maybe consult with a dealer first just to see if a part exists that can be changed, and or if it's part of the frame, then a fabricator, a welder, would be somebody to consult. But you want somebody that's talented and certified, a certified welder, you know?
All right, this one is from Alex, and then we'll take a quick break, and then we'll go to the phones. 800-348-2551, the number. Gordon Fricke, our guest. Alex in St. Johnsville writes, I have a 2011 Kia Sorento, all-wheel drive. The driver's side CV axle appears to be leaking grease on the inboard boot, although the boot does not appear to be damaged. The leak is located near the large boot band and is black in color. I see no other signs of a leak nearby or above the CV axle. At this time, there is no noise from the joint while driving. Would it be better to replace the boot and bands and repack the grease, or should I just replace the entire CV axle? That is from Alex.
Yeah, that's a good question, because once in a while, we will see that inner band fail or loosen up and the grease works its way out. So best case scenario, reclamp it. But if the boot is faulty, has a crack in it, or it's fatigued and broken, if you can buy the boot, which you probably can, and you're capable of removing the axle and changing the boot, that might be a better way out. But as far as the skill needed to take that joint apart and put everything back together properly, sometimes you're better off changing the component complete. So got two choices there.
All right. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's Automotive Maintenance and Repair Today. The number is 800-348-2551. We will take a quick break, and then we will hit the phones. Miles Davis once said, I'd rather hear Thad Jones miss a couple of notes than to hear Freddie Hubbard hit 100 of them. And I got to tell you, that's beautiful stuff. That Thad Jones and Frank West there. It's Vox Pop 219. Still a few minutes left in that tornado warning, which is in effect in the Albany area in Rensselaer and Schenectady. So be on the lookout to make sure you take some cover. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated. And if you have a car question, now is the time, because we go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Ryan in Malta, you're first. Go ahead.
Hey, Gordon. Two questions. First one is that I have a code indicating that it's a downstream O2 sensor. So I get the O2 sensor. It's kind of pricey. It was $200. It's not the $65 one. Yeah, well, I'm lucky.
What kind of vehicle is it?
It's an 04 Volvo 5-cylinder, mm-hmm. Not the turboed.
Yep.
Just the regular plain Jane. And I've got a lot of miles on it, but they drive like forever.
Sure.
So, but then the light goes out. The check engine light goes out. How do I feel like I'm chasing Schrodinger's cat.
Well done.
So how do I figure this out?
So you got a code. What did the code indicate? Was it a heater operation of that sensor, or a performance or slow operation? You remember what the code said?
Yeah, it was heater.
The heater circuit. Okay. Well, so oftentimes the sensor is the problem of the heater circuit. However, the heater is a heater, so it's getting powered by, it's getting 12-volt current to heat the sensor to make it warm up quicker to operate more efficiently. So it is more than likely fused, and you need to get into a wiring diagram and see where it's fused. Because did you say, so the light's back on, same code?
No, the code was on. That's how initially I saw the problem, or, you know, with the code reader.
Right.
And while I was waiting for the part to come in, you know, 2-3 days, and then you don't put it in, I don't put it in right away because there's life. the code before I put it in. The check engine light went off.
The light went out by itself. Okay, I got it. I got it.
Yeah, and I made sure I checked. I checked my first thing everyone should do when your check engine light goes out is make sure that the check engine light, you know, do the lamp test on your dashboard. Make sure that that darn light didn't blow out because it's coming on so often.
Yeah.
So I made sure that that worked.
All right.
Any idea?
Yeah, you can do two things. Save the sensor, save the receipt, keep driving. See if the light comes back on.
Yeah.
If it does, the heater element in that sensor could be getting weak, and the resistance is maybe going too high or too low, causing the computer to flag the problem. Pardon me?
All right.
It's getting flaky over time.
Yeah, it could be slowly failing. So you may end up having to replace it, but there's no harm in driving it, especially with the light being extinguished or off by the computer. That means it's happy at the moment.
All right, Ryan, thanks a lot for the call, and bonus points for the quantum physics joke. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Mary is in Kingston. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Mary, are you there?
Oh, Mary, hello? All right, it's dialing for dollars.
Okay, good. No, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, welcome to the show.
Sorry about that. Running around with a cell phone.
Ah.
Didn't realize I hit mute. So I have a very simple question, because you started it, Ray, when you said if a light on your dashboard is going off, call. Just this morning on my way to a client, my check fuel cap started blinking. Now, this is a new car to me. It's a 2013 Honda Odyssey minivan with 57,000 miles. Last month, I had all the spark plugs replaced and one fuel coil that was shot for some reason. So this morning, I said, it says check fuel cap. I'm trying to remember, when did I fill the tank last? It was a couple days ago. Why is it blinking now? I turned off the engine, opened it back up and clicked it a couple times. And I started the engine. It's blinking again.
Oh,
check fuel cap.
Right.
Why?
Well, so it's a little deceiving in that there's really not a sensor or, you know, a device connected to the gas cap telling you it's not on.
Mm-hmm.
It's the computer, which is constantly checking lots of things while you're driving. And one of those things is the fuel tank maintaining adequate pressure? They don't want the gas fumes to be leaking into the environment.
Right.
So the computer runs these tests constantly. So your vehicle failed the first test. So the computer is thinking, the tank is not holding minimal pressure. So maybe the gas cap is loose, and we're going to recommend that the owner check that cap. If you've checked the cap and it's currently tight, there is a small leak somewhere that the computer has detected, and you may have some rust or corrosion around the seal where the gas cap screws down and tightens up.
Okay.
In other words, if you take the gas cap off and look at the neck part that it screws down to, if that has any corrosion around it, you can clean that up with maybe a scouring pad or some fine sandpaper. And then what we do is we put a little bit of synthetic grease on there to really make a beautiful seal when you put the cap back on. And then you can just keep driving it, and the computer's going to keep testing. And if that solved the problem, it will turn the light off, and you'll be tickled pink because you fixed it and didn't cost you anything.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And if it stays on, you've got, then if the light comes on, the check engine light's going to be the next one to follow, then you'll need to get the vehicle checked. No need to panic, though. It's not a thing that's going to cause you to break down.
Mary, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's cars and trucks, repairs and maintenance. 800-348-2551 is the number. Patricia in Woodstock. Hello, Patricia in Woodstock.
Hello, everybody. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I have a 2000 Honda Civic hatchback, which I love, and I'm really trying to keep going. And it all of a sudden it started making a not a very loud, but a squeaky noise when I turn the steering wheel when I first start the car and turn around in the driveway and that sort of thing. And I was just wondering if you might know, Gordon, what that is, what might be causing that.
Ray, what do you think?
Well, I think that, you know, you might need a little power steering fluid.
Well, that would be one thing to check.
Steering.
What?
Say it again.
I don't have power steering. I have, you know, manual, you know, really have to turn that wheel
wow.
hard with my
really? Yeah.
elbow grease.
God bless you. Yeah. That's great.
Well, so I was going to think about the condition of the drive belt or belts on a car that age. If you have power steering on a car that age, it's belt driven. And when you turn sharp and hard, it puts all the strain on that belt to get all the power steering to work, and the belt will squeal if it's a weak point. Hmm. Are you sure you don't have power steering? I mean, you may not. Some Hondas, very, very base models, didn't.
Yep, I got a very base model, wow. and my husband didn't think I needed power steering.
So it's probably a manual transmission also.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's usually the way they packaged them. And plastic wheel covers.
Does it have an engine, Patricia?
It has a great engine.
Okay, good.
It's like
good.
Brand new engine.
So that then the squeak might be coming from the wheels, the brakes. Could be some rust buildup on the brake rotors. When you turn the wheel very sharply, it puts different strain on the wheels. So if you don't have power steering, you still could have a belt squeal from the alternator that is still operating. So I would have the belt checked because a car that age, I'm sure it's a manual adjusting belt. It may be loose. And or then there may be some issues with the brake shields or there could be some a rust buildup in there. So I don't think it's anything horrendous, though.
Okay. What are the brake shields?
Well, there's metal shields behind the brake discs or the brake rotors, and they're there to keep debris and stones and road salt and water off of your brakes. But they're pretty close. They're located very close to the brake rotor, which is turning with the wheel of the car. So if a piece of rust or a stone or anything gets in there, it will make noises. We see that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a very quiet squeak, like.
Oh boy.
It could also be that you may be getting close to needing brakes if you haven't had them checked in a while.
I think I might be.
Yeah,
I haven't had to get brakes in a long time.
I think I would get that stuff looked at, and it may be a rust buildup, and or you might just be getting close to needing new front brake pads and rotors.
All right, Patricia, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's Automotive Repair and Maintenance Today. And let's go to Melva in Suffield, Connecticut. You're on.
Hi, it's Mervette.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's okay. I'm getting a shrug from our call screener. That's all right. You're on.
That's okay. I have a 2003 Cadillac Seville. That has been really in excellent shape. I have no problems at all with it. The only issue I have is that I have the on the dashboard, it lights up with the wording service stability systems.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I noticed if I am on the highway and I go beyond 60 miles an hour, it vibrates a little bit. If I go higher, like 70, then the vibration goes away. I took it to my mechanic maybe 4 or 5 times to check on this, and he said, let us balance the wheels. He did that. I changed the tires. It's still happening. And when that service stability system light comes on, it makes a bit of a noise until I actually stop. So I don't know what else to do.
Sure. So if you sign the title over to Ray, because Ray is a Cadillac fan.
Yeah, yes, indeed. And I've had my share of issues with them, too.
Well, yeah, you take the good with the bad, right?
Right, exactly.
So they address the shimmy correctly. It usually is a wheel tire situation where they're either out of balance or the tire is not perfectly round anymore or there's a bent wheel. Other things can cause a shake on rotation, and CV drive axles could be the cause. How many miles are on this car, roughly?
It's 100,000.
Yeah, that's not terrible, but that means that there could be some things that are showing some wear. Going to the stability light, that is tied into your anti-lock braking system. So a shop should be able to go into the ABS computer and see if there's any codes. And if the light, it's been turning the light on frequently, there should be codes in the history of the computer. And that may lead the repair shop to a possible sensor issue. And on that particular car, it is possible, and I don't know without seeing that age car, but a lot of vehicles, the wheel speed sensors are reading a signal from the CV axles. So you may have one thing causing both problems.
Okay.
So I think I would.
What is the CV axle?
That is what drives your vehicle. It's called a drive axle.
Okay.
And that's what turns the wheels. When you step on the gas, the engine turns the transmission, and the transmission turns the wheels, basically.
Okay.
So I think that's where the problem could lie. But it definitely needs to get checked.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call, and sorry for calling you, Melva. Reminds me of an old Seinfeld routine. Melva, Chris in Westfield, Massachusetts, you're on.
Hey, how you guys? Thanks for taking the call. I've got a new 2019 all-wheel drive Prius, and I want to get an extra set of snow tires. And in the past, we've always bought studs, but they're trying to tell me people don't do it anymore. What's your thoughts on it?
Okay, the signal is a little weak on your cell, Chris, but I think we get the gist. Gordon.
Yep. So the question basically is, to stud or not to stud? Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so studded snow tires are very good for certain conditions. They're great in super, super hard pack. They're good on ice. They're not that good on dry roads. So when you're commuting and, you know, how many times do you really need studded snow tires? And I don't know what your commute is, but you have to weigh the need versus the other aspects of having studded tires. They're noisy. They're more expensive. They don't handle that well on dry roads. If it's a all-wheel drive car, which you've indicated, unless you are commuting to the ski areas or you have a really, really terrible commute, I would opt for a winter tire that is of the studless compound, a studless snow tire, and they give you a bit more of an edge on the ice and the hard pack. They're a little bit a step above a conventional winter tire or snow tire, and you don't have the studs, the noise, and all the other stuff that goes with it. So I don't know if that helps sort out the question.
Yeah, I mean we basically go ski every weekend, you know, and it's just that the hard pack. Black ice conditions, I don't see the rubber helping much, you know?
Yeah. So then you certainly can go with four studded. You'll have the ultimate grip, and if you've used studded tires before on all four wheels, you're already aware of the sound and the kind of strange dry road handling. You know, you got to get used to that.
Sure. Okay. But
all right. I'm sorry, Chris. We lost you there, but thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Let's grab one more before the next break. And Megan is in Glenmont. You're on.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. Sitting here, there's a tornado or a hurricane about to hit, but I have a 2008 Honda Accord. I recently had an issue where my car finally just died. It was triggering hard to start, and then it just stopped. So I thought it was my battery. Hadn't replaced it in years. Replaced the battery, and then a few days later, it didn't start again. So I actually replaced the starter myself, and suddenly my driver's side door is not working. And I don't know if it's just a coincidence, but I can't roll the windows down. I can't. So is there a chance that I nicked something when I replaced my, because that was a pain in the butt.
All right, Gordon, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think so, because did you disconnect the battery before you changed the starter?
Yep,
that's good. And that's the only window not working currently is the driver's side.
So I can roll down the passenger side window from my driver's side door, but I can't roll anything else down. But from the back seats, you can roll those windows down.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. how many miles are on the car?
160.
Okay. Couple of suspicious areas to look at. I don't see it that much on Hondas, but we used to see it a lot on a lot of vehicles. So when you open up the door, the wires come out of the body of the car and they go out to the door. All the wires that run all your stuff, your windows, your mirror, you know, all the controls.
Yep.
That bundle of wires is in like a little protective boot.
Yep.
And I have seen the wires fracture inside there from the trillions of times that the door has opened and shut. If you can picture bending a wire back and forth, eventually it's going to break.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's what happens in those harnesses that go from the body of the car out to the door. And guess which one gets the most use? It's the driver's door. So that's always the first side to fail.
True. So, I mean, my mirror is working. It's just so strange that I can roll down the passenger side window and nothing else. My mirror works.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would look there first because that's easy to find. Sometimes difficult to repair because you're in such a confined area.
Yeah.
But that if those wires are all perfect, then you can 100% rule that out, and you may have a window switch issue. That master window switch could be failing.
All right, we have to take a break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We will check the email bag and then back to the phones for the home stretch in a moment. Gordon Fricke is our guest today. Man, thank you for being on this show today, my first show back from vacation, because I feel like I'm in slow motion.
And so am I giving you a little bit of a break?
Big time. I'm still on the beach, I think.
I'm directing some of the questions and comments towards you, though. I want to keep you going, you know?
You want to make sure I'm awake. All right, this is from Mark. Mark writes, whenever I bring my car in for service, they always try to sell me on a brake fluid flush. My question is, if the brake system in my car is hydrologic, then why does it have to be flushed if it isn't leaking?
And that's from Mark. Very good question, and a little bit it's not a service that is well enough explained to people. So brake fluid has a property called hygroscopic, and that means that it loves moisture. Brake fluid loves moisture. It's like mixing vodka and tonic.
Stop it.
So it's grabbing moisture 24/7, and it's getting it past the little seals around the calipers and the wheel cylinders and the cap of the reservoir that's on top of the master cylinder. So over several years, a lot of moisture can sneak into that fluid, and that's not good for it. It raises its, it lowers its boiling point, and brakes get super hot.
Yeah.
The fluid can boil out at those calipers on a hot summer day coming down a mountain, and when it boils, it turns into a gas, and you don't have liquid anymore, and you lose your brakes. And it's called, it turns into a gas in there. So, and I've had it happen. So it really 100% can happen. So the recommendation most car manufacturers say is just get it changed every 2 years, and then you got clean, fresh fluid all the time. So it's not a wives' tale maintenance. You just don't need to do it all too often, you know?
Gotcha. All right, this one's from Mike in Richmond. Gordon, what is your recommendation regarding oil changes in cars that are not getting driven as much as they used to? If I'm only putting on a couple of thousand miles a year on a car and use top-quality full synthetic oil, do I need to change it annually, or can I go to my usual 5,000 miles?
No, definitely don't go to the 5,000, because that'll take 5 years, and that'll be really bad.
Yeah.
Generally, you should do it annually, particularly being up here in our climate where we're getting seasonal changes. So the car is getting started and idled in you know, 0 degree weather, and then it goes out and goes to Maine at 92 degrees on the interstate.
Yeah.
So the oil is still getting some getting beat up a little bit. So I would still do it once a year.
But I mean, it's a sealed system, right? It's a full synthetic oil. If you have a thing of Velveeta and it's sealed up, it'll keep for a really long time. What's the difference? That's a full synthetic oil.
Yeah, but it's really not sealed because the crankcase is being vented. And the combustion that's happening in your cylinders sneaks past the pistons and gets into the oil and contaminates it. So over time, that's why the oil turns so black. It's from all the carbon in the gasoline that you're burning.
Okay.
So that's the short answer.
All right. Last email and then back to the phones. I know Chris in Housatonic has been waiting about 25 minutes. This one is from Bruce in Saratoga. And Bruce writes, wondering what Gordon thinks of wheel well liners for preventing rust. Just bought a new Ford Transit van. It didn't come with them, but I can get them. And that's from Bruce in Saratoga.
Yeah, I'm thinking I think he's talking about fronts, maybe all of them. But, if he's going to keep this vehicle long term and that vehicle does not have liners, definitely install them. If we were in a non-snow area down south out in the west, not a big deal. But the salt water brine that they put on the roads now is absolutely horrendous to exposed components under a car. So the answer is yes.
I mean, you know, you make such a great point. I watched this show called Counting Cars. And
that's a good one. Yeah.
Oh, God. And so these guys, they fix up cars, they make them into hot rods, whatever. But every now and then they drive around Vegas looking for cars to buy.
Yeah.
And there is about a 1971 Eldorado, and it's pristine. There is no rust. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's the Southwest.
They do not. It's the best way to preserve a vehicle seems to be out in that dry desert climate.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551, the number. Chris has been waiting a very long time in Housatonic. You're on.
Hi, Ray and Tom. I got a question for you.
Can you turn your radio down, Chris? It's really loud.
Okay.
I mean, I sound terrific, but I don't need to hear myself.
Is it safe to wash, steam clean your engine after you wash your car?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because in some cases you can do, I don't know if I would say damage, but you can get things wet that don't want to get wet, and the car will either not start, it'll misfire like crazy. The water can get down into the ignition coils where they go over top of the spark plugs. You want to be super, super careful washing under the hood of a car today. So I would leave that to maybe a detail shop that has experience and knows where not to spray. So I'd be super careful doing that.
Okay, because I did it once when I was down in Great Barrington, and I said, well, this won't hurt anything. I just gave it I used a light spray on the engine, didn't use a horse spray.
Right.
And now that I know, it's not a good idea to wash the engine under after the car wash. If I do go that route, I'll take it to an expert.
Yeah, if the engine bay gets filthy and definitely they need to be cleaned periodically, but you don't want to get yourself in $500 worth of trouble and get it towed in because it doesn't run anymore, you know?
Yeah, Chris, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Over to Mark in Albany. Mark, you're on.
Yeah, I have an 02 Dodge Ram 3500 dually, Cummins diesel 6-speed. The windows, I'm having issues with the windows. The windows stop where power windows, they stop working. The speedometer stopped working, and the blower motor AC unit stopped working, kind of all at the same time.
Do you think it was completely simultaneously, or did one fail, then the next failed, and then the next failed?
1, 2, 3, so not simultaneously.
Yeah. Tell me the year again.
02.
Oh, two. Okay. Well, so the newer Dodge trucks, and I don't know how far back this component goes. It may go back that far, but there is a module called a TIPM, and it's called a totally integrated power module, and it controls basically all the stuff you just spoke about, and it's right under the fuses. Left side of the engine compartment, but I don't know on an O2 if that's the same vehicle, if it even has that module. But that TIPM module controls a lot of things, and they do fail, and it knocks out a ton of stuff.
And that's under the fuse box in the engine compartment.
Yeah, I mean if you get on the internet and just maybe research whether your truck even has one. I don't know when they started putting those in, but I've fixed wires under them. I've changed them before, and they can create a tremendous amount of trouble because they control so many things. But if your truck has it, it's basically the component that's under the fuse box that on newer Dodge trucks, it's on the left side, the driver's side inner fender well under the hood.
Okay.
And if that's the case, a shop can plug into that module and read codes or read data and determine if the module is the issue or not. So I would start there.
The window motor works. I've jumped it from the battery. The blower motor works. I changed out the fan and the resistor, and now it doesn't work at all. It used to work on setting 5. Now it doesn't work at all. And then the speedometer quit.
Oof. Yeah, I mean, you could have one sole source that's controlling all those things. A truck that age, we've seen a lot of grounding problems, where the factory bundles a whole bunch of wires together and bolts them to one location for a ground source. And that is entirely possible that you've got a bad main ground somewhere on that truck. And to locate that, you need to get a manual and a wiring diagram, or maybe you could get it up, you know, get it on the internet and search locations of your body grounds and component grounds. And that could be the whole cause for your truck. It could be a grounding issue, corrosion.
Mark, thank you very much. Gordon Fricke is our guest today in the waning moments. Let's go to Jimmy in Southampton. Jimmy.
How's it going? First, I just want to say that this show is pretty much my saving grace. I'm a truck driver out in the Hilltown areas on Western Massachusetts, and I don't have much options out here to listen to music. So you guys pretty much saved my day. But so I have a 2003 Nissan Pathfinder, which has been an absolute disaster for me. I just replaced two resonators, the full exhaust, and 2 days after that, I went for a drive and my transmission blew. And now I have a small... I'm trying to think how to... It's probably the width of a softball-sized spot of oil coming from the passenger front side. So if there's like a... It looks like a skid plate is underneath the bumper.
Yep.
And it looks like it's like kind of like dew-dropping onto that and dripping right off the corner.
Yeah.
So at this point, I'm just trying to figure out, like... I'm into it like 2,500 in the past month.
Ouch.
So... like, where do you think it could be coming from? Or like, is oil leaks like really? Because I have my buddy who tells me, "Don't worry about it. It's only oil. It makes more of a mess than it does, and it doesn't sound too logical."
Yeah, yeah. So I'm assuming this is an automatic transmission.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what could very likely be the cause here is the automatic transmission has metal lines that carry the fluid from the transmission up to the radiator to keep it at the right temperature.
Okay.
And those metal lines probably are rusty, and I bet you've got a pinhole leak, and it could be transmission fluid that you're having drip rather than engine oil. Some of those did have engine oil coolers as well. So I think what you should do is get that skid plate down, unless it's the bolts are super rusty and it hasn't been off the truck in a long time. And I think you will find that there's some rusty metal lines leaking.
Okay. And I mean, that seems like a fairly reasonable job to do considering what I've already done.
Well, it can be a bit of a chore depending on how rusty they are and, you know, what you've got to disconnect to get to them. But it's a very common thing to replace transmission and oil cooler lines because they rust up here in this horrible salt climate we get in the winter, you know.
Jimmy, thank you very much for the call, and thank you for the kind words. It's a great slogan. Vox Pop when there's no other option. Paul in Schoharie. Paul, you're on.
Yes.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, it's great to be on. I've never done this before.
Oh, well, here you are. Go ahead.
I'm British origin. I love Minis. I had my first ever car was a Mini. But when the new Minis came out in 2003, I ordered a brand new one, and I've had it ever since. So it's 17 years old. And for the second time, I have a airbag warning light. And the first time it happened, I took it into a local dealer around here, and they fixed it. But they couldn't tell me what they'd done. So I went back to them again this time. And the next day, I got a call saying they can't fix it. It's a dealer problem. And I got charged for an hour's labor for them determining that they can't fix it. Any ideas? Because I worry about whether they're going to go off without any warning or whether they just won't work.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Well, we only have about 45 seconds here, Gordon, sure. So give it your best.
Yeah. So that first generation Mini was definitely cool. In fact, I was in the 90s. We went to Brands Hatch Raceway above London and watched a bunch of them race. Very cool. Yeah. But to get to your question, the fear of it exploding is extraordinarily low. I wouldn't worry about that at all. Mm-hmm. My worry would be that it's not going to work in the event of a crash. And because of the software needed, the shop you took it to apparently doesn't have the European software to read that.
Right.
So I would locate a shop that has the airbag software for your vehicle, or you'll be forced to go to the dealer.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, listen, that's it. Where we will have to leave it. Yeah. Paul, thank you so much for the call. All right, Gordon Fricke, you did good, brother. I appreciate you being here on the first day back, and we'll talk to you soon, right?
Sounds great. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, Gordon. Support comes from Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. Berkshire Money Management, providing full-service financial estate and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. BerkshireMM.com for more. And Capital Roots, working year-round to provide nourishment, community, and a sense of belonging for individuals who call the Capital Region home. CapitalRoots.org to learn more. Once again, thanks to Gordon Fricke for being on the line with us today. Thank you for listening. Huge piles of apologies to all those folks who did not get through. We only have about an hour, and that's the best we can do. But Gordon will be back. Trust me on that. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. Kayleen White took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, great timing for this one. We'll be talking weather with meteorologist Jason Goff tomorrow. That's 2 p.m. Right now, stand by for The Book Show.